Going Linux episode 148, Linux Antivirus, the advanced episode. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux. In today's episode, Antivirus on Linux.
And we hope that you find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 75,000 titles. If you're a regular listener, you already know that we have a special URL that lets you get a free audiobook from Audible when you sign up for a 14-day free trial.
Whether you're a regular listener or a new listener, if you haven't signed up, the place to get your free audiobook and a 14-day trial is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. There is still no Audible player that runs natively in Linux, so before you sign up, make sure you can either run the player under Wine or that you have a portable device like an Android or other smartphone that can run the Audible player.
Well, Tom, we have completed our introductory episode to Antivirus on Linux, and we discussed quite a bit. What's been going on in your world since we last talked?
Oh, let's see. I haven't crashed my system in a while.
That's a good thing.
And I found a really nifty command to make it run faster, better, cheaper.
Oh, really?
And we'll cover that later, yeah.
Oh, is that one of those Windows tune-up tools that you can get on TV for $49.95?
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but much cheaper.
Okay. And it works on Linux, huh?
And it works on, well, Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, okay.
And any other Linux, but the command's going to be a little different for other Linux distributions.
Okay, so do I hear a software pick coming up?
That's what it is.
Okay, we'll deal with that later then.
It's a software pick, but it's really just a single command.
All right, cool.
All right, so that was a teaser. That's what we call that in the business. Folks, don't try this at home. We are professionals.
Yeah, I think you actually have to get paid before it's considered professional.
All right, I'll give you a dollar if you give me one.
Okay, now we're professionals. Okay.
Okay.
Well, as we discussed in our introductory episode, the market for antivirus and anti-malware software is booming. Windows has over 1,000 new viruses a day, and the Mac operating system has recently been under attack as well. Can Linux be far behind?
Yeah, you know what? Before we go on, Larry,
yeah,
I'm going to ad lib a little bit. This is a request to all of our listeners. If you install antivirus software on your Linux machine, and it ever finds a virus on your machine or malware or anything like that, let us know about it.
Please.
Yeah, yeah. This is importance number one. Really, 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 if you find a virus on your Linux machine, let us know about it. And we'll send you some free software.
Right. Okay, that sounds good. And just to clarify, Tom, does that include Windows viruses on your Linux machine or just Linux viruses on your Linux machine that you're
special? Any virus on a machine that's running Linux.
Okay. All right.
You know, if you're dual booting Windows and Linux and the Windows side of it picks up a virus, well, that's because you're running Windows. So, no, we don't need to know about that.
Right, because we know you'll find one. So if you're just running Linux, that's what we're talking about. Okay.
Right. Right. So what I'm saying is we don't think you're going to need an antivirus to protect you from Linux malware yet. There's not a Linux-specific malware in the wild, but you might want antivirus software installed on your Linux computer for three reasons. One, to be prepared just in case there's a malware released for Linux. Two, to be courteous to your friends who use other operating systems. Antivirus for Linux currently scans your computer looking for malware that might infect other operating systems. Only that malware won't run on your Linux machine. So number two is kind of iffy, but we put it in there. 3 is really a kind of a good reason. If you're running antivirus on your Linux machine and you connect to networked Windows machines, you can clean up their infections. So you can be nice to a Windows machine on your network.
Right. And I think number 2 there, Tom, was more for someone who may have a virus or something like that in an email that was sent to you, and your Linux antivirus can pick that up so that you don't forward that on and pass that
That's
on.
That's truth. Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah. So there's a good reason for number 2, being courteous to your friends. Let's not pass
sure.
on any viruses. Let's not be a carrier, right?
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into the installation part of this podcast now. Tom, what do you think?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So let's take ClamAV and Bitdefender. Those are the antivirus software packages that Linux Format magazine, in their online Tux Radar article from a year ago, had recommended as their top 2 best antivirus for Linux. So those are the 2 we're going to focus on for this podcast, okay?
And ClamAV stands for Clam Antivirus.
Right. Kind of makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. And ClamAV has 3 parts, 3 main parts. You've got the ClamAV engine, the Clam malware definitions, and the Clam TK, graphical front end. And the alternative to the Clam TK graphical front end is the Clam QT graphical front end. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get Clam TK from the Software Center or the Package Manager and install it if you're running Ubuntu. And when you select it, Clam TK will install the other 2 components as, well, sort of dependencies.
Right.
It'll take care of that for you.
Yeah. So let's just walk through that. Now, I'm going to install it on a computer that I have running Linux Mint. And if you're running Ubuntu or any other Debian-based distribution of Linux, it'll be very, very similar. So you can go to the Package Manager, Synaptic, or the Software Center, or the Software Manager, or whatever it's called in your distribution. So if I click on Menu and go to Software Manager and Linux Mint.
Oh, you're going to install it right now?
I'm going to install it right now. Absolutely.
Okay.
So Software Manager comes up. It says gathering information for 32,816 packages.
Free packages.
Yes, of course. And we may have to wait a little longer than normal because this is a slow machine.
Okay, but no, we don't have to wait longer than normal, but because just like on a cooking show,
we edit.
Yeah. So the cake goes into the oven and 10 seconds later, here it is.
Yes, okay. All right, so now we're at the Software Manager screen where we have lots of different categories. I'm going to bypass the categories, go right for the search, and type in Clam. And if I do that, it will...
try to guess.
It will try to guess, and it will find a bunch of Clam packages here. Clam TK is right at the top. It's labeled graphical front end for Clam AV. And the second one is Clam AV, and then Nautilus Clam Scan, and a whole bunch of other Clam libraries and packages and so on, some of which we will need and some of which we won't. But let's not worry about that. If we click on the Clam TK, it should install everything that we need. So click on
just for fun, do Nautilus Clam Scan too right away.
Okay.
I couldn't get it to work, but maybe I was just confused.
I think it installs that as well. Tell you what, let's see what happens when I just select Clam TK. So I got Clam TK. Let's go click install. There we go. Oh, needs my password, of course. It's one of the reasons why it's very difficult to...
yeah.
In fact...
what's your password again?
It's a whole bunch of asterisks.
Oh, okay.
Or at least that's the way it appears on the screen.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it says 1 ongoing action, 5% complete. So we'll wait for it to complete. And while it's doing that, I'm going to go back to the search results. And it doesn't tell me what is being installed quite yet. So we'll just wait.
the cake is in the oven.
Yep, 24, 27, 31, 34. Okay, 60%, 62%, 64%. We're moving right along here. 93%. Okay, so let's go back and see what it actually installed. Clam. Okay, is it going to tell me? Okay, it did not install the Nautilus Clam Scan. Okay, Tom, so now we have ClamTK installed. Let me close the software manager. Let's go to menu. And let's find out where it is. All applications, we need to select that in Linux Mint. And so we go to accessories, and there it is listed as virus scanner. Let me click on that. And nothing happened. Oh, there we go. And so now ClamTK has opened. And it says ClamTK virus scanner, as you would expect it to.
Yeah.
And it says status, antivirus engine 0.97.1. GUI version 4.32, antivirus definitions July 30th, 2011. It is yesterday on the day we're recording this. And it says last scan never and last infected file never. So let's go to the advanced menu and select preferences right from the start.
Okay.
So under the preferences, there are four tabs. There's a scanning preferences tab, a startup preferences tab, a whitelist, and a proxy settings tab. So under scanning preferences, the options are scan files beginning with a dot. So in other words, that allows you to scan hidden files. Right. So if I check that checkbox, which is not checked by default, that will allow me to scan hidden files. All right. So also, it says scan all files and directories within a directory. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Enable extra scanning settings. I wonder what those are. Well, we'll have to go to help to find out about that. Then it says scan files larger than 20 megabytes. That sounds like something I would want to do. And so I will check that box. Scan Samba-related directories. GVFS and SMB4K. So if you have a Samba share set up, you would want to select that. I do not, so not on this machine anyway, so I'll leave it unchecked. And keep a record of every scan.
Okay, let's go with a explain a couple of things here.
Yeah.
A couple of words that you said. One is GUI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's spelled GUI, and that means graphical user interface.
Right.
And now Samba is the thing that lets you connect to Windows machines.
Exactly.
Is that right?
For file sharing, right. Okay, so now what I've got selected there are these checkboxes. Scan files beginning with a dot. Scan all files and directories within a directory. I'm not selecting enable extra scan settings until I read what they are. Scan files larger than 20 megabytes. I have not selected scan Samba-related directories, and I have selected keep a record of every scan. So moving along to the start preferences tab, everything is selected by default, and it shows check for AV engine updates, always a good idea, check for,
yeah,
for GUI updates, graphical user interface updates, and use OpenDNS servers, which I do have set up, so I'm going to leave that selected.
Okay.
Now the whitelist tab doesn't show anything, but if you have directories that you don't want to scan for some reason, and I'm not sure why you would want to do that, perhaps.
Well, a false positive.
Sure.
It thinks that it found a virus, but you know for sure that there isn't one there. You can whitelist it and say, don't worry about this anymore.
Okay. So this actually allows you to add directories rather than individual files to the whitelist. So if you have any of those files, you might want to put them in their own directory and add that to the whitelist. And then proxy settings, I'm not going to worry about because I don't have any proxy settings that let me get out through a firewall or required by an internet service provider. But if you do have a proxy, you may want to make whatever adjustments need to be made there, selecting a specific port or domain or whatever is necessary. And you will know if you have an internet service provider that requires that. Okay, and so now I will just click close now that we've got things set up. Okay. So I think before I begin any sort of scan, Tom, I'm going to check for updates. So if I go to the help menu, right there, there's a menu selection that says check for updates. So I'll click on that. A little window pops up and it says check for graphical user interface updates and antivirus engine updates. Exactly what I want to do. I'll click the button that now says check for updates. It says a newer version is available for the GUI updates and antivirus engine is reporting out an out-of-date engine. Okay, so now the unfortunate thing is there's nothing here that lets me update it.
Yeah, you know, I ran into that too.
Yeah, so let me just close and see if there is a way to update. Rerun any virus schedule, blah, 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 blah.
All right, I'm opening the virus scanner now. I have successfully done this, so I'm opening it up.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm looking at scan, view, outdated engine. I got the same thing.
Okay.
Check for updates. Yeah, I got the same thing. So this is pretty much crap.
All right, well, let's try under the advanced menu. There is a rerun antivirus setup wizard. Now, I don't remember that we went through a setup wizard, so let's rerun it and see what we get. Please choose how you will update your antivirus signatures. If you would like to update the signatures yourself, choose manual. If your computer automatically receives updates, choose automatic. So what this is telling us is that if you're relying on Ubuntu or Linux Mint, in my case, to provide you with updated signatures for CLAM, you would have it selected to automatic, which is what it's selected to right now. If you want to go to the CLAM site and get those updates yourself, select manual. So that is why under check for updates, you don't have the ability to go get new updates because it's finding them on the CLAM AV site and they're not available from my Linux distributions repositories and I have automatic updates selected. So let me select manual and see what happens. So we'll click apply. Your preferences were saved, close. So now if I go to help, check for updates, it says now I have three selections, signature updates, GUI updates, and antivirus engine updates, and a check for updates button. Clicking on it is now taking a little longer than it did before. It says signatures are current, a new version of the graphical user interface is available, and antivirus engine, the antivirus engine is reporting an outdated engine, and still no way to update those engines.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Okay.
Are we done with CLAM AV?
I think so. Other than maybe let's just run a scan. So if I check the scan menu and I have the choice of scanning a single file, a directory, a recursive scan, a quick scan of my home folder, or a recursive scan of my home folder. So it appears that some of those settings under advanced, when I selected preferences to scan all files within a directory, I really didn't need to do that because those options are included in recursive. That's what recursive means, is to scan not only the top level directory, but also delve down into any subdirectories and folders in those subdirectories.
Right.
So let me just, for sake of speed here, select a specific directory.
Wait, there's something coming to me here. I'm seeing your future.
Ah.
It's not going to find any viruses.
Really? You think?
I don't know. I don't know why that came to me. Spirits are with me here.
All right. Well, let me try scanning the downloads folder. Okay, let me see that. That's where I would get viruses, right? For sure. If I downloaded something with a virus in it. All right, let's try that.
Okay.
I'm going to select that. Click OK. And it is scanning. It is scanning. It is saying, please wait. I don't know what I'm waiting for.
You're waiting for it not to find anything.
Ah, there we go. Now it's running. Okay, it scanned all the files in my download folder for 1,011,969 signatures, and it found nothing.
Aha! Hey, do you have a Windows machine attached to that network?
Actually, I do not.
Okay.
So, I can't scan it, and we can't test it out any further, but we'll leave that as an assignment for the listeners.
Okay.
Okay. So, now I'll click exit, and we are now done with Clam AD.
Yeah, we're going to get all kinds of email about what we did stupid just now, but...
But that's okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. In fact, if you can help us with any of this, understanding it out, understanding it, that is great. But what we have done is what the average user would do.
Right. And half of trial and error is error.
Okay, so that was really very straightforward for ClamAV because it was in the package repositories.
Right.
All right, so...
And it kind of works.
And it kind of works as far as we can tell. It didn't find anything, so how do we know it works? I don't know.
Yeah. It could just be a 30-second timer.
It might be. It might be. But I trust the guys at ClamAV. I'm sure they're actually scanning for something. All right. So let's go on to Bitdefender. And before we go to the installation of Bitdefender, we have to let you know that it's not in the repositories.
So you're going to go to bitdefender.com and get it?
That's exactly right. But before we go there, their website says... this about Linux viruses. Oh.
Okay, the following quote does not represent the opinions of Going Linux, and any similarities to persons or places, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Okay, Larry, go.
With that disclaimer, Bitdefender's quote is, Linux is no longer immune to security threats. Linux operating systems have been considered less vulnerable than Windows systems for many years, but the myth that they are immune to virus attack is completely false. The Linux platform... The Linux platform's early low instance of attacks was primarily due to the lack of root access required for malware to infiltrate the system, the Linux community's ability to quickly patch vulnerabilities, and the low adoption rate of Linux in the corporate network. This made Linux a lower priority target for the writers of malware. However, that priority is changing quickly as the platform's popularity across sectors increases. Bitdefender Antivirus Scanner for Unixes... which is the plural for Unix, by the
way.
Really? Yes. Bitdefender Antivirus Scanner for Unixes is a versatile on-demand scanner for Linux and FreeBSD systems. The standalone scanner protects both Unix-based and Windows-based disk partitions by scanning for viruses and spyware. Easy-to-use graphical user interface complements a powerful command line interface that fully supports operating systems scripting tools. End of quotation.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. There may be a little bit of a motivation on their part to actually sell you something.
Yeah, and part of that quote was the low adoption rate of Linux in the corporate network. Well, if you're listening to Going Linux, you downloaded it from a Linux system.
Yes.
And a Linux network. So this is, so, all right.
Yeah, well, and in the corporate environment... You know, many of those servers that actually run the network, whether you're using Windows on your desktop or not, many of those servers are Linux. So, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Anyway.
However, that being said, you can go to www.bitdefender.com and find it yourself, or we will put a link in the show notes for just where to download the Bitdefender for Linux and Unix and BSD, etc.
Right.
And once you're on that page, you click the link on the left to request a free license for personal use.
Right. Now, be very careful, because it will show you some very big buttons on the right-hand side that show buy now for $93.75, or try business solutions now, download a free trial now, and also Bitdefender business sales, and gives you a phone number to call them to have them sell you the product. If you look in the upper left-hand corner, there is a request a free license for personal use only. That's the link you want.
Okay. So now it's starting to become clear what those quotes were all about. They're selling this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it didn't scare me, so I'm not buying it.
didn't scare you. Oh, the warning didn't scare you. Okay.
No.
So the next thing you do is when you click on that link, it does ask you to fill out a form. And yes, you do have to fill out the form, but it's not too onerous. You just give them your email address. But the email address, okay, ostensibly is to send you a link so that you can do the download.
Okay.
Right? So you
are you going to do that?
I have done that already, but yes, okay, I'm going to do that. So I check the I agree checkbox and click send. And it tells me that it's going to send me an email. So let me open my email. Here we are. And
before you clicked I agree, you read it, right?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course. Okay, so now in my email, it says, this is your personal license for Bitdefender antivirus scanner for Unisys. It is free of charge, and it only allows you to use the product for personal purposes, with no commercial implications whatsoever under the terms of the end user license agreement. Let me click on the link to the end user license agreement and read that before we continue. Anyway,
oh, this won't take long at all.
No. So let's just bypass that. I have read it and thoroughly understand that, you know, my firstborn child is theirs,
sure,
if I use their product.
Sure.
Under the personal license, you may use Bitdefender antivirus scanner for Unisys to scan your personal laptop or desktop computer, but you are not allowed to use the product in a business environment. And I'm yelling because it's all in capitals, such as on an office computer or a company server. So,
not
for business. Okay. And your personal license key is, and they give me a whole bunch of letters and numbers, you can download Bitdefender antivirus scanner for Unisys from here. And there's a link. So I click on the link, and it takes me to an SMB share. Okay. And it shows me parent directory and a folder. And the folder is labeled ENFRBRRO.
And that's... Which spells?
N for Brobro.
Okay.
Just to be clear. Yeah. Those are the languages that it supports. English, French, Brazilian, and Romanian.
Oh.
Yes. So unless you're fluent in one of those languages, I guess you can't use their software. Anyway, clicking on that folder, it opens another set of folders. So there's docs, FreeBSD, and Linux. Well, Linux is the one I want to use.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I have a bewildering list that I can choose from. So I have a AMD64 deb file, an AMD64 deb MD5 sum file, an AMD64 IPK file, an RPM file, another deb file, another IPK file, another RPM file. So
one of these, you're going to want deb, right?
Well, if you're running a Debian type distribution like Ubuntu or Linux Mint or Debian itself, or any distribution like Nopix that is based on Debian that uses the deb package file format, you want the deb file. And you want either AMD64 if you're running a 64-bit version of Linux, or you want the i586 if you're running a 32-bit version. And that goes for most of these kinds of files that you might download from a website. AMD 64 indicates a 64-bit version. Whether you're running an AMD processor or an Intel processor, it doesn't matter. The 64-bit version is usually listed as AMD 64. And the 32-bit version might say i386, 486, 586, 686. Any of those indicates a 32-bit version.
Okay.
Now, all of these files end in .deb.run, so you're not actually downloading a deb package.
What are you downloading?
You're downloading a script that goes and gets the latest version and downloads it from their website. So make sure you are connected to the internet before you actually run this file you're downloading. And so I'm running a 32-bit version of Linux Mint, so I will choose the one that says Bitdefender Antivirus Scanner 7.6.4 Linux GCC 4x.i586.deb.run. Long file names.
Yeah.
So I choose that and I download it. So I've already downloaded it. So now I go to my downloads folder and I find that file. And here it is, and the name is the same as what I just read you, so I'm not going to read it to you again. It says shell script. Now let me see, by right-clicking on it, if I go to properties and permissions, aha, it is not checked by default to allow executing file as a program. So I will check that and close. Another safety precaution, so that if someone sends you something via the internet that is a script that might install malware, you actually have to go in and tell it that it can run. Okay, so now we have Bitdefender package ready to go. So what I'm going to do is now go into a command line. So what I can do in Linux Mint is I can right-click on the folder, the downloads folder, and select Open in Terminal.
Yep.
That isn't there, I don't think, under Ubuntu.
No, in Ubuntu, if you just double-click it, it'll ask you what you want to do.
Okay.
It'll ask you if you want to run it in a terminal, display it as text, or just run it without a terminal open. But I think we're going to want to run it in a terminal.
Yep.
So that you can see what's going on.
Let me try that in Linux Mint as well. So, yes, if I double-click the file in Linux Mint, it also gives me those options as well.
Okay.
So I will run in terminal. Click. It is running. And now...
And now it's saying all kinds of words, isn't it?
Yes. End user software license agreement. And let's see if I
back to your email.
Okay. Well, before I even do that, I got to get through the end user license agreement.
Okay.
So let me see. Page down, page down, page down. It's not doing anything. Why is it not doing anything? Oh, it's not doing anything because it's using the more command, which means I have to hit enter. Enter, 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 enter. No, that's not. Oh, my goodness. So I'm going to hold down enter key until I reach the bottom of the end user license agreement.
Which you are carefully reading.
Of course. When you get to the bottom, and the reason you have to do this is because at the bottom of the end user license agreement, it says,
I agree.
Please enter accept if you agree to the license agreement. Enter anything else if you don't agree to the terms in the license agreement. The installation will stop. Okay, so if I type accept, accept, enter, nothing happened because I think I hit the enter key too many times and it actually went past the bottom. So let's try this again. This is real world stuff, folks. Enter, okay, run in a terminal. Hold down the enter key. It does give you your progress as you're scrolling down. So 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, slow down. 80, 85, 86, 87, 88. keep going. We're at 97, 98, 99, 100. Okay, so now the prompt is there. And I haven't hit the enter key an extra time. So now I think if I type accept, A-C-C-E-P-T, enter. Still nothing. Okay. One more time. Okay, this time I'm going to do it from within a terminal. So if I now open the terminal, go to the downloads folder, type capital B-I-T, capital D-E-F, tab.
You have to type a dot and a forward slash first.
Oh, that's why. Okay, so in order to run this shell command from the command line, you type dot slash, which tells it you want to run what you're going to type in next.
Right.
And a space, and then begin.
Nope,
typing.
No space.
No?
Nope.
Really? Okay.
Really?
And type start typing the name of the...
Do that.
Why?
Go back to Nautilus and drag it to your terminal and let it go.
Okay. Drag the file to the terminal, let it go, and it is there. Ooh. So now I've got dot slash quote
and then
slash
a single
home.
Quote. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. It'll work.
All right. And enter. Okay, what do I got?
Survey says...
No, it says bash, no such file or directory.
Hit your up arrow button and take the quotes out.
Okay, take the quotes out. Oh, you know why? Because it has an extra slash, right? So I have to... Now it says dot slash home slash my username slash and so on. Okay, so now let's try it again. No such file or directory.
All right. So, you're going to have to see.
Wait. No.
CD into the directory.
I am there. So,
okay.
This is Linux Mint. It may actually require. Wait, do I have to type sudo?
Shouldn't.
Shouldn't.
It's got permission to run.
Now, do I have... Now, I've used this file and installed it without any trouble, Tom. Why is it doing this to me?
Because I'm laughing at... I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at you.
I am doing what a newbie user does every single time.
Okay, yeah.
So let me go up. Up arrow. Let me just take out all the extra bits of stuff.
Yeah, get rid of home slash blah blah blah.
So now it says dot slash and then the name of the file. And enter. Now it's running. Okay, so now I go scroll using the enter. I'm at 99% now, so I'll slow down. There we are. Please enter accept if you agree. A-C-C-E-P-T.
Wait, is it case sensitive?
It is all lowercase.
All right.
So whether it's case sensitive or not, I'm putting it in lowercase. Enter.
All right.
Okay, now it's saying installing Bitdefender antivirus, dpkg error, requested operation requires super user privileges. Could not complete the installation.
Oh, sorry. I told you you wouldn't need it, but I guess you do.
Okay, so... Here's a shortcut for our users.
Exclamation.
S-U-D-O space, exclamation, enter, runs the previous command as sudo. So now, asking me for my password. Enter, end user license agreement again. Hold down the enter key, scroll down. 86, 91, 2, 3, 4, 5, 99, And there we are. Okay, so ACCEPT, installing, selecting previously deselected package. It is installing. Finally.
All right.
And so now, processing triggers for man-db. Do you want to install Bitdefender Antivirus Scanner Graphical User Interface Package?
Well, oh, it asks stupid questions. That's good.
Yes, I do. Okay, type the Y and the Enter. Bitdefender Antivirus Scanner successfully installed.
Did you have to enter that code anywhere?
Not yet.
Okay.
So when I run it, it will ask me, I believe, or give me a place to enter that code. So going to the menu, and now where is it listed? Let's see. All applications, accessories. It's not under accessories. It is Bitdefender Scanner under System Tools.
Okay.
So now let me select and run that. It says loading the antivirus scan definitions. And I'm using two screens side by side, dual monitor setup, and it put the window split between the two screens. Very convenient, guys. Let me drag it over to the left screen. Okay. I have three absolutely huge buttons that say scanner, update, and settings. And then below that, it shows core status, version signatures, scan plugins, archive plugins, unpack plugins, and last updated unknown. And on the right-hand side, it says registration information.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to do.
Right. It has a key already in there, and it says trial, 30 days remaining. However, now what I need to do is go to my email and replace that key. So, going to my email, I copy the new key to the clipboard, click the Set New Key button, which opens a little box, paste the key in there, and click the Set button. And now it says registration information. It has my new key in there. The type is still free, but now it says the remaining time on my license is 365 days. So now I've got a year from now rather than 30 days from now.
Yeah, that you'll have to do something.
Right. So it will prompt me again, I'm sure, because that link that says go get a new free key is now gone. So I'm assuming when your license expires, it's going to prompt you to go ahead and get another one. And if not, you just go to the Bitdefender website and do what we just did, which is download a new key. And there we go. That's it.
All right. So run a scan. See if you've got any viruses.
Okay. Well, before I do that, there is an update button. Let me click up.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We got to get definitions.
Yes. Now, the thing is, we just downloaded this, so it should already have the definitions file. But the AV Core says version 1.7, September 8th, 2008. So let's hit the update button, see what happens.
Okay. And for anybody that's confused, AV in this case does not mean audiovisual. It means antivirus.
Right. So it is updating status, downloading anti-malware, e-malware, a whole bunch of files. Downloading. Current download speed. Okay, downloaded. All right, it's telling me that it's going to download 98,997,074 files.
Well, that won't take long.
No, they all look like little tiny text files, though, because it's going really fast. It looks like it's about a third of the way done already. So we will just, through the magic of time shifting, bring you to the end of this update.
All right.
Oh, loading antivirus definitions, and the entire screen just went blank. Not my entire Linux screen, but rather the antivirus software closed. And it doesn't appear to be restarting automatically, so let me go back to menu, all applications, Bitdefender scanner, loading antivirus definitions, and nothing. Okay. One more time. Let's go to the system monitor and see if it's running twice. No, no Bitdefender in the processes. My goodness. Loading the antivirus engine. Nothing on the bottom panel. There is nothing. I'm completely baffled. So we may have to reboot.
Oh, and we can't reboot right now because we're recording a show. What do we come away with this? So if you want to go after ClamAV and get frustrated, you can. And if you want to go after Bitdefender and get frustrated, you can. But as far as I'm concerned, you don't need antivirus on a Linux system anyway.
So we'll leave it at that.
Well, we hope that you found this helpful.
And not too frustrating. But this is real life with Linux. It's a bit of experimentation sometimes.
Scared away 10,000 people.
Well, I'll edit it so it's not so scary. How's that?
All right.
Just scare 3,000 away.
3,000.
All right. So much for our experimentation with antivirus software, Tom.
Oh, well, now wait a minute. We got AVG.
Well, I'm not going to install AVG.
Come on, Larry.
It's crappy. Bloatware.
It's only been an hour and a half.
Yeah, forget it. All right, let's try it.
No.
In the past, it has slowed down my system, so I personally don't recommend it.
We'll put a link in the show notes, though, in case you want to slow down your system.
Yeah, and get frustrated with the installation.
And get frustrated.
Yeah.
Trying to install something you don't need. Are we done, Larry?
I think we're done.
Okay, got a software pick?
I don't, but I know you do. Tell us about it.
I sure do.
Okay.
Actually, it's not a software pick. It's a command. And here's the command, and I promise you it's safe. Sudo space SYSCTL, which I believe is short for system control, space VM, that's Victor Mike, dot swappiness, SWAPPINESS, equals 10. And there wasn't a space before equals or 10. And now I'll tell you what it does.
Okay.
The newer Linux kernel, which everybody has by now, has an element in it called swappiness. Now, you've got memory in your machine, and you've got a hard drive. And when a page of memory isn't being used for a while, the kernel pushes it off to the hard drive. What this is meant to do is to free up your memory and push off things that probably won't be necessary for a while off to the hard drive. But the hard drive takes thousands of times longer to read and write than memory does. And swappiness is a number from, I believe, 0 to 100. 100 means start swapping right away. Free up as much memory as you can. And 0 means wait as long as you can. Don't swap anything out to the hard drive until you absolutely have to. And the default is 60, which is pretty swappy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to lower that to 10. And on my little MSI Wind machine, my little netbook, I have noticed a substantial increase in performance since I did that. Now, after executing this command, the next time you reboot, it's going to be gone. But there is a way to make it permanent so that it happens on boot up, and we will put a link in the show notes to complete instructions on how to do that.
Okay, well, that sounds very useful for somebody who has perhaps a an underpowered machine like an MSI Wind or one of the netbooks that's out there. And if you just want to tweak your computer to run it, make it run faster, especially if you have lots of RAM and a slow hard drive, this would do it for you.
And the full explanation about what it means and why you might want to do it and everything else will be on that link in the show notes.
Okay, and I'm looking at that link right now. And where does it tell you how to do it? Permanently. I don't see it.
Okay.
I'm probably just
What is swappiness and how do I change it? Do you see that?
Got it, yeah.
Okay. And scroll down until you see...
to make your change permanent. Okay. All right, so you add it to your syscontrol configuration file.
Right.
Okay. So that's very good advice. And for those people who don't like to change the engine oil as the jet is flying over the continent... you may want to try it from a terminal, as Tom suggested, first, and see if you experience any performance improvement or whether it completely breaks your system. And if it completely terminates your
It'll be fixed
your
when you
Linux
when you
session,
reboot.
It'll be fixed when you reboot. Yes, absolutely.
Now, I've been doing some pretty heavy-duty processing before we started recording on this little machine, and we're using Skype and Audacity and all kinds of stuff, and right now my total swap is zero. It's running completely using memory and not the hard drive at all. As soon as you start using the hard drive for memory, you get slowed down.
Right. Okay, well, I am going to do that right now on my little machine that I have sitting over here in the corner. There we go. And it is really...
You don't want to take bolts out while we're flying?
I could do that, but... Let's not.
Okay.
Okay. So where would I experience this speed up, Tom, if I'm doing something that takes a lot of memory?
You know, I can't point to any particular thing, but I get a general feeling on the machine that it's running faster.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so we'll leave it at that and see where it goes.
Okay. And listener feedback is appreciated. Try it out. Tell us what you think, good or bad.
Yeah. And our next episode is a listener feedback episode. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And please email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at +1-904-468-7889.
And if you call the voicemail, no one will answer. It just records. Follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can use the HTML5 player or the Flash player to play them right there on the show notes page. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.